Today we're beginning here on the top of Yud-Tet Amud Aleph by the two dots. Tanan-Hotom, we have a Mishnah in Eruvin. This actually is issues with regards to Shabbat, nothing related to what we're speaking about. We're going to see that as a corollary to the Dinim of Shabbat, that has implications in the Gavei, the big day, Kehuna. Tanan-Hotom, Kohen Shalaka Be'etzbo. He has some sort of injury on his finger, on his hand. As Rashi notes over here, Shkenayu Shetiresha Makato. That it would be not appropriate or it's not appealing to have the injury or the wound be visible to other people, so he wants to cover it up. Korech alea gemi b'migdash. He's allowed to wrap it with a reed in the migdash of a lo b'medina, but not outside of the migdash. So here is the ki halacha that is being told over in the Gemara in Erevin with regards to Shabbat, which is that there's a distinction between the migdash and the medina. And that is because in the Medina, all the Takanot, Gzerot, Chachamim apply. We have a principle with regards to the Migdash that ain't Shvut b'Migdash. That there is no concept of Dinei Derabbanan when it comes to the Migdash. It's not exactly true. Even with regards to Dinei Shabbat, where we'll see here that the Migdash does not abide by those Gzerot, Chachamim. Nevertheless, there are certain Takanot, Gzerot, Shvut, Derabbanan, that the Balei HaTosafot say in a number of places in the Gemara and Shabbat, they note this, that are so powerful, or they're so meaningful, that they're not automatically waived. It's not a carte blanche that we say that any shvut is not applicable in the Mikdash. There are certain times where there are Dinei Derabbanan and certain Dinei Shabbat that do apply within the Mikdash. As far as this is concerned, there's a distinction that's being made between the Mikdash and the Medina. Now as far as what the issue is, Rashi says it's a problem of davar sheyesh bo refuah. Placing of the gemi on the wound is medicinal in nature, and asur mishum shvut gzera shemi ishchok smamini b'meri might go and crush with the pestle and the mortar this medicine that he needs. And now we have a general principle on Shabbat that we don't engage in refuah, we don't engage in medicinal and curative things because of the problem of shemi ishchok basmanim. And because you might crush, you might make the medicines that you need, but that's true out of the Medina. Aval b'migdash lo gazru mishum shvut. But because there's no dinei derabbanan in the Migdash, there's no problem. That's the way Rashi views it, that this is a more global issue that's being addressed by the Mishnah Eruvin, which is an issue of medicinal cures or things that are used in medicinal nature, whether it's permitted on Shabbat. And what we're saying is outside of the Migdash, you have a problem. Inside the Migdash, you would be fine. The Balei HaTosafot say that it's more of a local problem, which is that the placement of the reed around the wound could put pressure on the wound and cause there to be blood to come out. We're worried about him causing blood to flow out, or blood to leave the body, which we're going to see in 1 second, is not even an Isur de Rabbanan. That would be an Isur de Oraita, to have blood exit the body on Shabbat, to create a wound, or to press blood out of the body on Shabbat. That would be a big problem. And so he says here, the placement of the bandage around the wound, there's a fear that you might squeeze out blood while you're putting on the bandage, or in order to put on the bandage, you squeeze out the blood to clear the area. That is the issue, which is a much more local issue. It's not a refuah issue, and it's not something that's inherently asur. The placing of the gemi is not asur, because we're worried about the fact that if you place the gemi on, you might come to squeeze the blood out. Now, with regards to Rashi's view, there's an inherent problem because you're doing refuah. Now, refuah itself is not inherently problematic. It's all gzera atu shechet simanim. But nevertheless, it is a more of an inherent problem that it's refuah. And that's the distinction. The Balei Tosafot do note that the Yerushalmi sounds much more like Rashi, that the problem here is a gzera mishum refuah. And that's why there's a distinction made here between the Medina and the Migdash. V'im lo tzimi men adam, if it's to cause blood to flow out or to come out, kan v'kan asur, then it's restricted both in the Medina as well as in the Migdash. As Rashi notes over here, the chaburahu, you're creating a womb, you're forcing the blood out. V'isu d'oraita, that's a Torah prohibition. And therefore, it's going to have application both outside the Migdash and in the Migdash. So now here, we are going to bring it back to our sugya, which is, Amar Rav Yehuda b'Reita Rabbi Chiya, Loshanu elagemi. It's only true that he's allowed to put on a reed. Aval tziltzul katan have a yitur bigadim. On the other hand, if he puts on what Rashi calls a bendel, and the word tziltzul in general in the Gemara is used to mean a belt of some sort. See that, we're going to see that at the end of Nachot with regards to the tensions between who is going to be the Kohen Gadol. They also use the term there, tziltzul. A tziltzul in general is a belt, a money pouch, something that goes around. Obviously over here we're talking about it, speaking about a very small belt, or a bendel that's being wrapped around the finger. So there's a difference between a gemi, which is something natural, a reed that is being put around, versus a tziltzul, which is a beged, a piece of cloth or clothing that is being placed around. So he says, if you put a reed around there, that's fine. You put a beged around there, you put tziltzul katan around there, that's already a problem of yitur begadim, that you now have more than the requisite number of clothes that you need to wear as a kohen. So now you have not four big deku, now you now have a fifth beged that you're wearing, and that's the issue over here. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, lo amru yitur begadim, el makom begadim. Something cannot be called a yitur beged when it's not in the place where you normally wear bigadim. When you wear it on your finger, the finger is not a place where the big dekuna normally appear. Therefore, it can't be called the yitur bigadim. The yitur bigadim that's meaningful is when it is bimakom bigadim, in the place where you normally wear bigadim. Avashalom makom bigadim, lo bi yitur. If it's not in the place where the bigadim are normally found, that is not considered to be a yitur. Typically, mishum chatzitza. And why don't we worry about the fact that there is a problem of chatzitza here? Now, in the way that Rashi reads it, it seems to be it's a question on Rabbi Yochanan Shita. Why don't we worry about chatzitza? Over here, we're speaking about the chatzitza. We're not speaking about it with regards to the big day kuhuna. We are worried about it from the perspective of his doing avoda. If there's something on his hand, we know that the kohen has to be directly in contact with the avoda that he's doing, whether it's the kli sharet that he's holding to do kabbalat adam, whether it's the korban that he's putting on the mizbeach, anything that he's doing has to be in direct contact with it. For instance, he can't wear gloves. We noted this before. Now, Rashi over here says that, heichi shari Rabbi Yochanan. How is it possible that Rabbi Yochanan was matir in this case? And you look in the Bach and Odalit, he says, v'nir be'enai, be'evrin lo mefarish la Rabbi Yochanan. It's not particular to Rabbi Yochanan. Over here, Rashi's saying that because Rabbi Yochanan was the last one to speak, and they interject it right after Rabbi Yochanan. But he says, "Yishmar defsha the Rabbi Yehuda bar Rabbi Chiyai Mari matznitin davka the gabi makah v'lo avi chatzitza." So maybe our mission is only speaking about a makah, and therefore wouldn't be a chatzitza. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, that is shelo b'makom bedim lo avi yitur b'gadim. May it sounds like that would be mutar. That's why they asked the question in particular on Rabbi Yochanan, but you could ask the question more generically on the Mishnah in a Ravin, which is, how could you allow for anything to be placed on the hand? Isn't it a problem of a chatzitza? Now, if you say it's directly associated with the wound, that's what the Bach says, maybe you could argue that in that case it's not a problem, versus Rabbi Yochanan, who says that we're not worried about itur bigadim, then it's not necessarily directly associated with a wound. And that means that he could even be wearing something on his finger for whatever reason. How could you allow such a thing? Dibulei mishum chatzitza. It's small. It was on his left hand. Because all of Oda in the Mikdash is done with the right hand. You know that there's a machlok at the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon with regards to this. At least according to the Chachamim that you have to do it with your right hand. It's on the left hand. It's not going to make a difference because the left hand is not engaged in the avoda. Inami, the other alternative is shelo b'makom avoda. The injury or whatever you're putting on your hand is not in a place where it's associated with avodah, as Rashi notes, agabayad, on the back of your hand. In that the avodah is done with the palm of your hand, with things that you hold. So if it's on the back of your hand or the back of your finger, then there's no issue of chatzitza, because it doesn't come into contact with whatever avodah you are doing. And so that will be the solution to that problem. Now the Gemara says, upligi derelva. These two qualifications that we had on the Mishnah seemingly argue on Rava. Dama Rava, Amar Rav Chista, b'makom bigadim, afilo nima achat chotzetzet. In the place where the bigadim are, even a single item is chotzetz, which means whether that's a hair, whether that's a thread, anything that is there will create a chatzitza. Now, in terms of the chatzitza that is created over here, it's different than the chatzitza that we normally find by, for instance, going to the mikveh. Over there, there are requirements that it be rov, kufo, whether it's rov, rosho, has to be something that is makbid aleha. Over here we're speaking about a single hair or a single thread being a chatzitza. That's because there's a special requirement in regards to the big day kuhuna, that he wear them al bisaro, that he wear them directly on his body. And therefore, anything that creates a separation between the big day kuhuna and bisaro is a failure in al bisaro. That specific requirement that it be al bisaro, first of all, it's not something that is about his whole body. So when you go to the mikveh, the whole body's got into the mikveh. Therefore, chatzitza is looked in the context of the whole body. Well, here, your view is with each particular beged, it must be al bisaro. So you're just speaking about it from a much smaller perspective. And within that perspective, it's also a specific imperative that it be al bisaro. So anything that stops it from being al bisaro is going to be problematic. So he says, anything that is b'makom b'gadim, any type of chatzitza is going to be a problem. Shelo b'kom b'gadim, anything that's not in the location of where the beged is, shalosh al shalosh chotzitzot. Then 3 by 3 is chotzitz. Pachot mikan, neino chotzitzot. Below that amount, it's not going to be considered a beged or itur b'gadim. Rashi points over here that the shalosh al shalosh chotzitzot, the word chotzitzot is used as a borrowed term, not as meaning particularly that it is a chatzitza. So here the problem, shalosh b'makom b'gadim, we already determined he's not putting it on in a place that's going to interrupt the avoda. It's on his left hand, it's on the back of his hand. It's not in a place where there's a problem. So now, the problem is that you have an itur beged, the possibility that you added on something, an extra beged. And how do we know he's speaking about beged? It's because shalosh shalosh is a din that we find in Tumah with regards to the minimum size of a beged. 3 by 3, etzba'ot, is the minimum size of any beged. And therefore, what he's saying here is you have something that is chashuv. So a Rava gives you 2 dinim. 1 din that deals with chatzitza, which is under the beged. If you have anything that's there, it will cause a problem with chatzitza between the b'saro. A 2nd din is on your hand. You need something of significance to be considered a beged before you have a problem of yitur bigadim. Without that, it'll just be batel because it's not significant enough. It's not a beged. It doesn't take on a shame beged. So Gemara says, Ad Rabbi Yochanan v'adei pliga. For sure, this statement of Rava argues on Rabbi Yochanan. It's definitely arguing on Rabbi Yochanan because Rabbi Yochanan said anything that is below b'makom b'gadim is not considered to be a problem of yitur b'gadim. Clearly, over here, we're speaking about shalom b'makom b'gadim. And despite that fact, Rava says there is a problem of yitur b'gadim if you reach a certain threshold. Rabbi Yochanan says there's no problem once you're outside the area of the b'gadim. The question is, does he argue on Rabbi Yehuda b'reid Rav Chiya? It's not clear that he argues on Rabbi Yehuda b'rei the Rabbi Chiya, because Rabbi Yehuda b'rei the Rabbi Chiya said that one can't put a gemi on, they cannot put on a tziltzul katan. Tziltzul katan is less than this 3 by 3, so it would seem that Rav is arguing, because Rav is saying you need a minimum standard to be a beged, whereas Rabbi Yehuda b'rei the Chiya didn't give any minimum standard, he said even a tziltzul katan. So Gemara says, maybe shani tziltzul katan t'choshit. What's the reason that Rova requires a minimum of 3 by 3? Because that gives it significance, and therefore it is a beged. Maybe a tziltzul katan is inherently significant because it's something that people wear. It's something that has utility, and is used in other places. Given that it's chashuv, it gets the standing of like a beged of 3 by 3, and maybe even Rova would agree to that. That's the first version of what we just read over here. Lishna achrina. They have a different version of this. Amri lo, some that say, Amar Rabbi Yehuda b'rei de Rabbi Chiya, lo shanu ela gemi. That's only true by a reed. Aval tziltzul kutan chutzetz. But a small bandage, belt, bendel that's put on would be a chatzitza. And the truth is, if you look at the version here versus the version before, it would imply that Rabbi Yehuda b'rei de Rabbi Chiya also is different than the previous version. In the previous version, Rabbi Yehuda b'rei b'chiya said, "Lo shana legemi aval tziltzul katan avi yitur b'gadim." Over here, he uses the term chotzeitz, which would imply that the issue is different. In the first time, he said it was a problem of yitur b'gadim. This time, he says it's a problem of chatzitza. Rashi says that's not the case. The word chatzitza is used here, similar to the way it was used at the end of the previous statement of Rabbi Yochanan, which is chatzitza means yitur b'gadim. They're being used interchangeably over here. And the word chatzitza doesn't literally mean a chatzitza over here. In that way, he smooths out the differences and says, Rabbi Yehuda b'rei de Rabbi Chiya is no different in this case as he was before, and therefore we're going to see the only distinction is in Rabbi Yochanan's shita. Obviously, the fact that Rashi is addressing that tells you that there was an alternate view, which is that Rabbi Yehuda b'rei de Rabbi Chiya is different in the second version than he was in the first version. The first version, he's speaking about yitur b'gadim. In the second version, he's speaking about chatzitza, what will be considered a chatzitza. But Rashi smooths that out and says that they're the same thing. But the real difference is in Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan amar, lo amra chatzitza, bepachot mishalosh al shalosh. Ela b'makom bigadim. Something can only be a chatzitza when it's less than 3x3, when it is in the place where bigadim are normally worn. Obviously over here, again, Rashi is saying this, that the word chatzitza is being used here to mean yitu bigadim, because 3x3 gives you a significant beged. Aval shelo b'makom bigadim, in a place where they're not worn, shalosh al shalosh, chotzitzot. And 3x3 is chotzetzet. So here you have Rabbi Yochanan saying that where the makom bigadim, any amount will be chotzetz. And it's possible over there that that chatzitza means literally chatzitza. Could be a problem with yitur bigadim as well, but it's probably chatzitza. But outside the place of the bigadim, you need a minimum of 3x3 to be a problem. So this is different than Rabbi Yochanan in the previous version. In the previous version, Rabbi Yochanan had no standard. He didn't say it has to be 3x3. He says that outside of the makom bigadim, there's no yitur bigadim whatsoever. Over here, he says there is yitur bigadim. It's just there's a standard. It has to be above 3x3. Less than that is not considered to be yitur bigadim. V'hainu, the Rav Amar Rav Chisda. In this version, Rabbi Yochanan is exactly like what Rav Amar Rav Chisda said, which is that outside of the makom bigadim, 3x3 is problematic. Below 3x3 is not problematic in terms of yitur bigadim. So that way, Rabbi Yochanan would align with Rav Amar Rav Chisda. And as Rashi says, that the only difference between the first Lashon and the second Lashon is Rav Yochanan's view. Whether Rav Yochanan has a different view than Rav Amar Rav Chisda, or he has the same view as Rav Amar Rav Chisda. But as far as Rav Yehuda b'Rei Rav Chiya, he doesn't see that as being distinct. Lema pliga ad Rav Yehuda b'Rei Rav Chiya. So now, both Rav Yochanan and Rav Amar Rav Chisda will have the same opinion. Let's say they argue on Rav Yehuda b'Rei Rav Chiya. My answer is the same way it did before. Shaini tzitzul katan d'choshiv. Maybe they would even agree with him, because a tziltzul katan is significant in and of itself, and therefore it gains the status as if it is 3x3, and that's why it would be a problem with yitur bigadim, even though it doesn't reach the threshold that Rabbi Yochanan set out. Well, the Rabbi Yochanan, my iriya gemi. Why in the Mishnah, in Irvin, does it use as an example that he put a reed on his finger? Leshminon tziltzul katan. Why doesn't it tell us about a tziltzul katan? Because that would be a bigger chiddush to tell us that a tziltzul katan is not a problem. So why not tell us, not only is a gemi not a problem, but not even a tziltzul katan is a problem. So that would be a bigger chiddush. Why not say that instead of mentioning gemi in the Mishnah and Erevin? So milta agav orche kamash malon, it teaches us something as an aside, the gemi masi, that reeds have curative properties to them. The reed is not just being put on because it's a bandage. It also affords some sort of curative properties. Whatever the natural chemical makeup of the reed was, they assumed had some medicinal effect on you. And so now, as the Rabbi Tosafot point out, we have a principle of Lashon Chachamim Mirapeh, that the words of the Chachamim are curative. And so therefore there is a value in putting something in the Mishnah that also gives cure to it. So even though it would have been a bigger chiddush to tell us about tziltzul katan, nevertheless they told us about a gemi, because that way the Mishnah is also teaching about ripui, curative things. And so as an aside, it enhances the Mishnah to give you not only halakhic information, it's also giving you medicinal information. And then that will accord with this idea of Lashon Chachamim, or that the words of the Chachamim are curative, are beneficial. And so that the play on that idea is significant in itself to override the benefits of putting in tziltzul katan, or the chiddush of putting in tziltzul katan, and that's why he wrote gemi. So now the Gemara is going to move on to trying to understand what exactly is the requirement with regards to big day kuhuna, that they be al bisaro, that it be literally on his body. So al bisaro can be viewed in one of two ways. And you'll see through the nature of the questions that are being asked that that's what the Gemara is trying to probe, which is al bisaro could mean simply that there should be nothing separating between his body and the big day kuhuna. The other possibility is that literally it must be al bisaro, that the big day kuhuna must be in contact with his body. So that means it has to be skin tight, literally. And that you'll see from the question now. Nechtasa lo ruach bebigdo. If a wind blew into his beged kuhuna and separated it away from his body, mahu, what is the din there? Al bisaro beinan, valeka. Beged must be al bisaro, like we're saying, skin tight, quote unquote, or about close enough to his body that it's in contact with his body, and that fails here because there's air in between. Odilma derech levisha bekach. That's the normal way people wear their clothing, is that they are slightly loose fitting, and that air does get in there, or wind can billow out their clothing and cause it to separate away from the body. So that's not considered to be a failure in al bisaro. So that's the question. You see the nature of the question is telling you what they're trying to probe. Kina maush tachutz. A louse that is found on his body, is that a chatzitza? So over here we're looking about from the perspective of a real chatzitza here. Meita loti bailach, devadai chaitza. If it's a dead louse, for sure it is a chatzitza, because it's separating between the body and the big day kuna. Chaya mai. If it's alive, the louse, that's the question. Again, we're going to see here, we'll see it many times in the Gemara Nida especially, that they had major issues with lice, and they could not rid themselves of the lice, and it was something that they quote-unquote lived with. It was a nuisance that caused them discomfort, but it was rampant, and therefore it has impact in terms of halacha, because, for instance, by Nida, when you have some sort of sightings of dam, that they blamed that many times on a louse that got crushed there, because it was so common to have lice that people were plagued by on their bodies. So again, here it's a little different than we think of it today. That person who was covered in lice would be considered to be unhygienic. Back then it was a way of life. Almost everybody had this problem, was plagued by this problem. Since the louse moves around, it goes, it comes, and maybe even this is its living space. This is where it's growing up, because it uses the body in somewhat of a parasitic form. So it's really growing along with the person. So therefore, since it's a natural habitat below chaitza, it's not considered to be chatzitza. Odilma came into copied Allah, or maybe because he doesn't want it there, and it's bothersome to him, and he would, if he saw it, push it away, wipe it away, then the copied Allah chaitza, therefore we consider it to be a chatzitza. Afar ma'ushi achotz. If he has dirt on him, is that a chatzitza? Afar vaday chayitz. What's the question? If you have dirt caked on your body in any way, of course that's a chatzitza, because that's something that's separating between the body and the big day kuna. Ella avak afar ma'u. What happens if it's very fine dust that is settling on the body? What's the din then? Is that considered to be a chatzitza because it's fine dust, there's something there? Or is it not a chatzitza because it's not something that is so visible? It's not something that has such tangible side to it because it's so fine, the dust. Maybe over there, that would not be a chatzitza. Beit HaShechi, the armpits. Mashi Yechotz, is that considered to be a chatzitza? Now here's the perspective of what the chatzitza is. Al b'saro be'inan v'aleka. If you have under your arms, you always need extra space. Because if you don't have extra space, the beged would tear. So unless you have a flexible fabric, if the beged is very tight under your arm, so much so that it touches under your arm, if you raise your arm, you could probably rip the beged. So you usually give yourself, or shirts are built in a way that give you extra room under your arm, so that when you raise your arm, you don't rip the beged. So now, in this case, is there such a requirement of Bab Saro Be'inan Valeka? It needs to be on his body directly, and you don't have that because you have a gapping underneath the arm. Oh, Dilma Derech Levi Shabakach. Or is this the normal way that clothing is worn, and therefore it's considered al b'saro? Because that's a very normal way to wear clothing. Hichnis yado l'tocheko mau. What happens if he places his arm inside of his chest, the Napoleon hand inside the beged, between his chest and the beged? What's the din there? Gufo michaitz, alone. Or maybe that's not a problem, because since it's a part and parcel of his body, that's not considered to be a separation, because it has to be al b'saro. His arm is also b'saro, or you could say min b'mino. It's his own goof. It's still considered to be al b'saro. Nima, ma'u shetachutz, a thread. What is the din with regards to it being a chatzitza? It says, nima vaday chaitza. Regards to a loose thread or a loose hair that's on the body, there it clearly is chotzeitz, because it's a foreign object that's sitting between you and the beged kehuna. Ela nima midudelet mau. What happens if you have a small thread that is hanging off the beged kehuna, in that it got pulled, or it was separated away a little bit from the beged kehuna, so it's not fully attached or fully woven in now? That loose thread that's hanging off the beged towards your body, Does that now become a chatzitza between the body and the beged? So none of these are resolved. They're all left as unresolved issues. And therefore, you would paskin the chumrah in general in all these cases to assume that all of these are considered to be problematic. Bayimar by Ravashi, yatsas arob bigdo mahu. Rashi over here explains that the issue is that his hair in the back was long enough that it actually went between him and the beged kiuna. Se'aro kigufo dami. Do we say that your hair, since it's attached to you, is no different than your body? Therefore, if your hair sits between your neck and the top of the beged kiuna, that's not going to be a problem. Olav kigufo dami. Or do we not consider it part and parcel of the body? Because we're talking about al bisaro. It's got to be on his flesh. It can't be that the hair is separating. Now, obviously, it does not mean hair that is tightly on the body. We're not asking a person to shave his arms or his underarms to do that, because that's, again, natural growth of the hair. Here it's meaning that the hair of the head, where it's growing away from the head, so it's not closely cropped towards the head. It's loose. He has, like, an excess of hair back there. And that's where the question arises. Your question is, wait a minute, don't the Kohanim have a restriction against growing out a pera, growing out their hair more than 30 days? They grow a pera, they're actually chayav mita if they come in and do a voda. So it's a serious issue. So either you have to say that they violated that isur, and the question is, now that they violated that isur, do they also have a problem now of a lack of big dekuna? The nafkamina is that a Kohen who does a voda with hair that is too long, he's chayav mita, but the avoda is not mechulelet. The avoda stands. On the other hand, if a kohen does avoda without big tekuhuna on, we learned in the Gemara, mechuser bigadim is mechulelet. The avoda is then profaned and is no good. So there would be a nafkamina between whether the hair, qua hair is a problem, because that, yes, he's chayav mita, but the avoda stands. But if the hair is a problem because of the big tekuhuna, not only will be chayav mita, he also will ruin the avoda. That's one way to deal with it. Other way to deal with it is brought here in the Shita Mikubetzet. It says, V'kasha l'riva, ta'avile the meimar nichnas saro, it should have said nichnas se'aro, that his hair went into that area. V'chein perish, se'ar beit ha'shechi, u'beit ha'erva kamar. The hair they're speaking about here is not the hair of the head, but rather the hair of the underarms and the hip pubic hair. She'atza l'chutz, v'nichpal al bitno. That it went out of its normal place, is now sitting, v'chotzeitz ben bigadav, and is causing a chatzitza. So again, in its natural place, and when it's growing, that hair is not considered to be a chatzitza. Question is, if that hair left its normal location, whether it means it grew out, it's longer, or that it separated somehow away from that location, does that then become a problem of chatzitza? So to avoid the problem of pera, he comes up with another way to ask the question with regards to the se'ar over here. So by Rabbi Zera, tefillin, ma'u shi'achotzu. What's the din with regards to tefillin? So this is the question that you had yesterday. Are tefillin now considered to be a chatzitza? Now Rashi says that the problem of chatzitza was here, the mihave yitur bigadim, to be considered excess clothing. We know from the Gemara in Eruvin, actually in the end of Eruvin as well, similar to where the Mishnah that we just quoted is found, the Gemara there speaks about tefillin being, in a sense, a beged. So if a person on Shabbat, when it's not Zman tefillin, finds tefillin in a place that's problematic, a person can put on tefillin, not for the mitzvah of tefillin, they can wear tefillin like a beged. They can wear it like it is a piece of clothing, and it's not considered to be carrying, because you're actually wearing the tefillin. So Rashi over here says that's the problem. Question is here, the tefillin, are they considered to be a yitor bigadim? Are they considered to be excess clothing that you're wearing, the bimakom bigadim, lisveshoyad, and is it considered to be a yiftur beged? Look in the Bali of Tosafot, he says, perishakuchis, says, ve'ef shalomarkein. He says, there's no way you can say that, because of the next line where it's going to say, ta'akamar limud aruch, the tefillin chotzetzet, ubishoyad ayrit, that the Gemara is going to answer that it's a chatzitza, and it's speaking about the shoyad. So it's not speaking about yiftur bigadim, it's speaking about chatzitza. Therefore, mishum chatzitza mamash nirat fei. It seems to be saying that the question about tefillin is not about whether it's yitur bigadim. The question is whether the tefillin sit between the basar of the kohen and the big day keuna, and they cause a chatzitza there. So that's the way the Baalei Tosafot explain it. The problem they have later on is that the Gemara then is going to say it's speaking about inan chotzotzot, bokmina la mishal rosh. The Gemara is going to say it's being better tefillin shel rosh. What's the chiddush that the tefillin shel rosh are not chutzitz? The tefillin shel rosh are not in between anything. There's no big day kahuna up there that it's considering a chatzitza for. So why would you speak about chatzitza with regards to tefillin shel rosh? Elam ken is speaking like Rashi that's speaking about yitur begadim. But he points out, even if you think it's speaking about yitur begadim, then it's also a problem because yitur begadim is only an issue where you wear begadim. Over there, you don't wear begadim where the shel rosh is, so that's not going to be a problem of yitur begadim. So at the end, he says, it must be that the chiddush over there is telling you that there is room to put on tefillin, or that there's hair there to put on the tefillin. That the Gemara is going to say with regards to the Kohen Gadol. I think that you could even argue, I think you could say even with regards to Kohen Hajot, that there's a question. He has to wear a mikvah. He has to wear a hat on his head. How does that hat interact with the tefillin? It partly is something that's b'makom b'gadim. So maybe according to Rashi, it could be yitur begad where the tefillin is. And it could also be a chatzitza, because depending on how the mikvah is placed on the head, then it would also impact whether you can put on tefillin or whether the tefillin might be a chatzitza between the mikvah and the head of the kohen. So I think the question is relevant there. The Bali Tosfot favors saying that we're speaking about a real chatzitza separation problem. As Rashi says, the tefillin is an issue of yitur begadim. So the question is, mitzvah de gufei chayitz or lo chayitz? When you have a mitzvah that's particularly associated with placement on the body, how do you view that? So according to Rashi, it means when you have a mitzvah that's on your body and something that will remain on your body is attached to your body, you're binding it to your body, does that consider it to be part of your body? Or is it then still separate and therefore it's a yitur begadim? According to the Bali Tosfot, more literally, it's bound to your body, it's become like your body, so there's no chatzitza, it's like al bisaro. Or, do we say that it's still a separate entity, and it creates a chatzitza? Aliba demanda amar laila lav zman tefillin hu. According to the one who says that nighttime is not the zman of tefillin, loti bayilach. It's not even a question. Kevin de lailach chaitzi. Since at night, for sure it's a chatzitza, because there's no mitzvah at night. So, then clearly wearing the tefillin is not going to be classified as being attached to the body, to the point where you would say it's not yitur beged, or to say that it's not a chatzitza. So yom nami chaitzi. Then for the juror during the day, it will also be chotzeitz. Rashi explains the logic, which is very difficult. De'im lo kein, if you don't say that, matzina abadat laila, chamir ma abadat yom. Because then it would turn out that work or avoda that's done at night has a chumrah that is not there during the daytime. Ve'en kalimim, and clearly work at night is of a lower level than that of the day. The majority and the primary avodot that are done in the Mikdash are all done during the day. At night, one is allowed to do what's called the cleanup work, which is that once the korbanot are brought during that day, and the dams on Mizbeach, the darim, the egvarim, and the fats can end up on the Mizbeach overnight, because you're just following up on what you did during the day. But that means that nighttime is not the primary time of avoda. It's really a derivative of anything that was done during the day. The night follows the day, and it does whatever was left over from the day that's still permitted to be done, something that's not part of the Ikar Avoda. What Rashi points out is that if tefillin would be a chatzitza at night and not a chatzitza during the day, it would turn out that you have a chumrah at night that you don't have during the day. That would seem to be incongruent with the fact that the daytime Avoda is the primary Avoda and not nighttime. But you could easily argue on that logic and say that the problem here is not a difference between avodah laila and avodah yom. It's a technical problem, which is tefillin at night or a chatzitza, tefillin during the day or not a chatzitza. That's not because at night it's more chamor. It's just a fact of life that tefillin are not a mitzvah at night. And given that information, you have a technical problem that will become a chatzitza at night. That doesn't mean nighttime is more chamor. It just means that at night tefillin are a problem because tefillin aren't worn or not a mitzvah at night. That logic to me seems somewhat precarious. So according to the opinion that Zman Tefillin at night is not relevant, whether that's because midoraita, there's a requirement that it be during the Yom, or whether possibly because there's a Gzeret Derabanan that we don't want you wearing Tefillin at night, and then you'd have to ask whether that Gzeret applies in the Mikdash, doesn't apply in the Mikdash. But according to the one who says, while of Zman Tefillin, Rashi says through the logic that he is dictating, that would imply that tefillin are a problem, whether they're born at night or during the day. We noted that the logic isn't soundproof over here, because the truth is it's not a difference between the avodat yom and avodat laila, it's a difference between yom and laila, irrespective of whether it's avodat yom or avodat laila, it has to do with the nature of the tefillin. But nevertheless, the Gemara takes it for granted that if it was a chatzitza at night, it would be a chatzitza during the day. Ki debailach, amandamar, laila zman tefillin. Mai. According to one who says that nighttime is the Zman of Tefillin, what is the din? Mitzvah de gufei chayitz, alo chayitz. If a mitzvah that is done directly on your body and requires it to be bound to your body, how closely associated does that become with your body? Do we say it becomes part and parcel of the body? And therefore, according to the Baal Tosfot, it's no longer a chatzitza, because it is your body, and that will be like gal b'saro. According to Rashi, it's not yitur b'gadim, because it becomes one with you, it's part of your goof, and it's not a yitur b'gadim. We say, despite the fact that you bind it onto your body, and it's a mitzvah b'gufei, it's still a foreign object in the end. If that's the case, it would be a chatzitza, according to the Baal Tosfot. For Rashi, it might be a problem, yitur b'gadim. Igal gal milta. This question rolled around from place to place, Rabbanon to Rabbanon, Umat le kamei de Rabbi Yami. Finally ended up in front of Rabbi Yami. Amalei, Talmud Aruch hu biyadeinu. Tefillin, chotzitzot. We have a clear Mesorah that when it comes to tefillin, they are chotzitzot. They do create a chatzitza. Meitevei, is that really true? Kohanim ba'avodotam. Ulevinim iduchanam yisro b'mamadam. So this is what you say at the end of Korbanot in the morning, that we asked Hashem to bring us back to the time of Beit HaMikdash, when everybody was in service. Kohanim ba'avodotam means the kohanim that are working in the Mikdash, doing the avodah in the Mikdash. Levim duchanam means they're up on the duchan, doing their shir that they do along the korbanot. Yisrael b'mamadam is from the Gemara in Tanit, that explains that there is a requirement that the balim of any korban be present. And so, for instance, the korbanot at Sibur are the korbanot of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, Klal Yisrael would have to be present as the balim of that korban. Obviously, that would be a possibility. So they created what were the mamadot. They divided up Eretz Yisrael into 24 regions, similar to the 24 mishmarei kehuna, and then each region would be assigned a week during the year, where they would send representatives up to Yerushalayim to be the representatives of all of Klal Yisrael as the balim of those korbanot ha-tzibur, and then they would engage in davening, special laning, fasting, not only the people up in Yerushalayim, but the people back home in that area that was a mamad, they also had special practices during that week. But they took turns in doing this, the mamadam. So it says here, any individuals engaged in one of these activities, turim minat tefillah, u'minat tefillin, they are exempt from davening, and they're exempt from wearing tefillin. Rashi says, the reason being, osek b'mitzvah, potur minat mitzvah, you're engaged in one mitzvah, then you don't have an obligation to be engaged in another mitzvah. They're engaged in avodah. They're engaged in the duchan, in the shir. They're engaged in the mamad. So that means they're already involved with a mitzvah. That waives the necessity for you to deal with another mitzvah. Now, the truth is that that's somewhat of a chiddush, because there's a machloket in the Rishonim as to whether a osik mitzvah, patur mitzvah, only applies when you have mutually exclusive mitzvot, or you can't perform both of them at the same time. Then you have osik b'mitzvah, patur b'mitzvah. But if you can be mekayim shnehem, you can do both of them, then there's a possibility that you would be required to do both of them, or you don't have an exemption of osik b'mitzvah, patur b'mitzvah, especially where the mitzvah that you're engaged in is somewhat passive. If you're not an active participant, like including here by the mamad, or you're fasting, you're davening, you're hearing laning, it's a possibility that those are passive kiyumim of your mamad. Maybe you should be able to put on tefillin, because they don't interfere with your ability to do the other mitzvah, or you can accomplish both mitzvot. The fact that we invoke osik mitzvah, poter mitzvah here according to Rashi, despite the fact that they are not mutually exclusive, shows you that maybe osik mitzvah, poter mitzvah applies even when you don't have mutually exclusive mitzvot. As long as you're engaged in the mitzvah, that's an important term, because just because you have a mezuzah on your house doesn't make you an osik mitzvah, poter mitzvah. You're wearing tzitzit. We noted this before, the Baal Tosfot say, that can't mean that you're patur from any mitzvah because you're wearing tzitzit. Because that's a passive accomplishment. That's not called osik b'mitzvah. That means you're just in the mitzvah. Assuming that there's some sort of isuk here in the mitzvah, that may grant you a patur from other mitzvah, even though you could accomplish both mitzvot. Since you're engaged in one, you're patur from the other. So my love, so what it sounds like from here, imen icham eno chotzotzot. That if you did put them on, they would not be chotzitzot. Because all the bright is turim, that they're exempt. That means if they chose to do it, they could do it. They're just exempt from doing it. Implying in that if they did put it on, it would not be a problem of chatzitza. You just told us that you have a mesorah that's filling our chotzitz. So this bright is a problem. It says, lo, imenicham chotzitzot. If you put them on, they would be a problem of chatzitza. Turim, then what is the right to say patur? asurim mi bailit, should say it's a sort to put them on because they're going to create a chatzitza. Where it says, came into ikal levim v'Yisrael, delo matn le asur. They have the levim Yisrael where asur be inappropriate language. Shemach itanet turim. Therefore put down the word turim to capture everything in the braita. Remember, only kohanim have the requirement of big day kuhuna. So the question of chatzitza is only relevant to the kohanim. So for the kohanim, enochanami, it's asur for them to put on tefillin. Not just patur, asur. But you can't use the word asur in the braita because v'Yisraelim and Levim, it's only patur, not asur. So it used the lashon patur to cover all bases, even though for the kohanim it's really asur. V'atanya iminicham ein chotzitzot. Don't we have a braita that says if you put on tefillin, they're not chotzitzot? Again, it's a braita that goes directly against that statement of Rabbi Ami that we have a mesorah that they are chotzitzot. Lokasha hadiyad hadarosh. Difference between the tefillin shel yad and tefillin shel rosh. This is what we were quoting in the Balei Tosafot before. Tefillin shel yad is chotzeitz. Tefillin shel rosh ain't no chotzeitz. So you have to explain, what does that mean, ain't no chotzeitz? Why would you even think there's a problem of chatzitza with the grips to tefillin shel rosh? It's not a makom bigadim, and so therefore it's not going to be yitur bigadim. It's also not going to be a chatzitza because it's not a makom bigadim. And that's why the Balei Tosafot in the end say, must be that the chiddush is that the bigadim allow a space for the tefillin, or that they don't create a problem, as we're going to see in a second, by the Kohen Gadol and the Ptilei Hatzitz. So, Maishna Diyot, what's the difference between the tefillin shel yad that it is a chatzitza? Tichtiv, Yobash al Bisaro, that the requirement with regards to the Kohanim is that they wear their clothing al Bisaro. Shaloye Dabar Chotzeitz Beino Leben Bisaro. This is the assumption that laid throughout everything that we said until now, which is that there's a requirement that the Big Day Kohana be al Bisaro. And so that Yubash Absaro tells you that it can't be any chatzitza, and therefore the tefillin shiyad are a chatzitza. Dorosh namiktiv is sometimes it's nefet arosho. So again here, the Gemara only quotes it with regards to the Kohen Gadol, not with the Kohen Adyot. Even though the Kohen Adyot has a requirement of mikbat, Gemara seems to think there's only an issue with the Kohen Gadol because he has a requirement that the mitznefet be on his head. And in addition to that, he has to wear the tzitz. The tzitz is the headband that goes over here across the forehead. It's nefet on rosho. Between the two of those, he doesn't really have any room left to put on the tefillin. Because he says, Tana, it's aroa yet nireb and tzitz the mitznefet. There was a gap between the panel that was on his forehead, that was the tzitz, and the mitznefet that had on top. There was a gap there where we put our tefillin, where his hair was visible, ben tzitz the mitznefet, shesha meniach mechin tefillin, upon which he put on the tefillin. And again, that's the chiddush that the Balei Tosafot suggests over here. Ilkach leka chatzitza. There is no chatzitza here. V'tana de'itzrich l'ashmeinan iminichan in chotzitzot. So why does the Tana have to tell us that they're not chotzeitz over here? Of course not chotzeitz, because there's nothing there to be chotzeitz with. So Rashi says, Mishum yitur b'gadimu. Again, Rashi quotes what he thinks the problem here is, that it's a problem of yitur b'gadim. De'itzrich l'ashmeinan de'la begedu. To tell us that it's not classified as a beged, and therefore it's not a chatzitza. Chatzitza doesn't mean a separation. Chatzitza means it's not yitur bigadim, according to Rashi. So Rashi is trying to understand, how can you call tefillin shel rosh chatzitza if there's nothing there to be chotzeitz with? So chatzitza must mean yitur bigadim. Given that it means yitur bigadim, the chiddush is that tefillin shel rosh are not considered to be yitur bigadim, whereas tefillin shel yad are a problem, not yitur bigadim, but real chatzitza. If you look back in Rashi, Rashi says that when it came to the question of putting tefillin shel yad on, Rashi changed his tune on a bit and he said, chotzotzot, to who ben beged the basar. There is a real chatzitza sitting between the Kohen and the big day kuhuna, and it's a real chatzitza. So the problem with tefillin shel yad is chatzitza. The problem with tefillin shel rosh is yitur bigadim. Tosafot asked on Rashi, what do you mean? It's not shelo b'makom bigadim. Why is it considered to be a yitur bigbeged? The Tosafot says you must have to say in the end that the chiddush is either that there's enough room for tefillin, or that the tilei of the tzitz, they were the tchelet strings that held up the tzitz that ran atop of the kohen's head. What you have to say is that those don't create a chatzitza for the tefillin, or the tefillin don't create a chatzitza for them, depending on which one was on top. Meaning the strap that goes around the tefillin have to go around the head, so do the tilei tchelet, and they interact with each other. So the question of which one's on top, whether it's a chatzitza or not, maybe that's the chatzitza that we're speaking about, according to the Balei Tosafot. Okay, now the Gemara continues and says, Mechuser Kippurim. We said in the Mishnah, someone who is now tahor. They went to the mikveh. They had the sun set on them, but they still have an obligation to bring korbanot. Examples like a mitzora, a zav, a yoledet. They all have a requirement to bring korbanot in order to finish off their kapara. How do we know that somebody who is a mechuser kippurim that does avodah, that it's mechalel the avodah? So midalon, amar Rav Huna, amar Kra, the pasuk says, v'chiber aleha kohen v'tahera. So that's found in Parshat Tazria, with regards to the korbanot that the woman brings for giving birth. And it says over there that, at the end of the parshim, lo timtzei yadeh deitzev lacha shtei tarim u'shnei menuya, chad olah v'chad hachatat, v'chiber aleha kohen v'tahera. Once she brings the korbanot, then the kohen will bring the korbanot, will provide the kapara, whatever that means in this context, vitahera, and then she will be tahor. So the Gemara says about that, vitahera, makhlal shehit meya. So that fact that the Torah says now she is tahor implies that she was tmeya until this point in time. Well, if she is tmeya, then we already learned that a tamei is restricted from engaging in avodah, but also if he engages in the avodah, it's mechalel the avodah. That was the first question we had in the sugya here, is how do we know that a tamei is mechalel avodah? So what the Gemara is saying over here is because a mechuser kippurim is classified as being tamei, therefore, tuma we already dealt with. Now that's an interesting source, because why don't you say the same thing by tvul yom? We had a similar lingua with regards to tvul yom, which is uba shemesh v'taher. That when the sun sets, he becomes tor, implying that a tvul yom was tamei until that point in time. So why don't we use that as the source for tvul yom, just like we're using that as the source for mechuser kapara? There's actually a very large Tosafot back on Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, and over there the Balei Tosafot asked this question: how come by tvul yom the Gemara just doesn't assume that he's a tamei, and therefore that's the problem, just like they do by mechuser kippurim? So he has a line here. He says, "Aval." It's because we find by tvul yom an explicit pasuk saying that they are disqualified and they invalidate the avodah. Despite the fact that their tuma is below the level of a regular tamei individual, so what tvul yom does is set up a paradigm or a precedent by which we can have this limud. If it was just tvul yom, learning it out of the psukim, that wouldn't be enough. And if that was the case, neither would tahera over here by mechuser kippurim be enough. Once we already figured out that tvul yom is also disqualified and invalidates the avoda, now we can look back and say, oh, tvul yom, even though he has a reduced level of tuma, he's still classified like a tamei, and he's treated like a tamei. Once we know that information, now when we move to mechuser kippurim, if we can prove that they are called tameim, even if it's a weaker form of tuma, it'll be subsumed under the problem of tuma. So Balei Tosafot say, Eino Chanami, this limud by itself would not be sufficient. It's only in the context of the limud of tvul yom that then sheds light on the fact that mechuser kippurim, then simply by being called a tamei, is also disqualified, because we find the same thing by tvul yom, and then by tvul yom we have the psukim. But if by tvul yom we also didn't have the psukim, just the fact that it's Vuyom or a Mechuser Kippurim is called the Tamei would not have been enough, because it's weaker Tuma. Once the Torah says that Vuyom, despite its weak Tuma, is problematic, then we can make the same assumption here by Mechuser Kippurim. As long as he's Tamei, that's enough to disqualify, invalidate the Avoda, even though it's a weaker form of Tuma. Shalo Rechutz Yadayim Reglayim, someone who didn't wash their hands and their feet, again, disqualified from performing Avoda, and Chayav Mita for doing it, and they are mechalel the avodah. It's profane. That's what the Mishnah says. How do you know that that's the case, that it profanes it? Ad yechuka chuka mimechuser bigadim. That we learn out from the gzeira shava. Remember, there was a three-way gzeira shava that we had before. It was shtuya yayin, richutz yadayim v'raglayim, and mechuser bigadim. So over here, we're going to use the chuka chuka to teach you, like just like by shtuya yayin, or just like by mechuser bigadim. Over there, it's mechalel the avodah. So over here, by Rechutz Yadayim Reglayim, it says Chak Olam, so too, that Chukah will teach you that if you don't do it, the Avodah is Mechulal. And again, this goes back to the Rabbeinu Tam that we saw in the Balei Tosafot, on the top of Yudchet Amud Aleph, where he notes that from the Gemara, it seems that the word Chukah by itself is not enough to say that this procedure is Me'akev. Rather, the word Chukah teaches you that it's Me'akev because of the Gezeirah Shavah. It's not the word inherently that does it. but rather the Gzer Shava that tells you that information. Eitan Rabbanan, Kohen Gadol, Shalo Taval, Shalo Kidesh, Ben Beged the Beged, Ben Abudah the Abudah. Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim, who's required to change his clothing 5 times over the day, and each time he changes his clothes, there's a requirement of washing his hands and feet, going to the mikvah, and then washing his hands and feet again. So here we have a braita that's telling us that a Kohen Gadol that doesn't do that, he doesn't do tefillah, doesn't wash his hands between his switching of clothing, or between each avodah, babad, and he went in and did the avodah, avodotav kasherah. That's not a disqualifying part of the avodah, it's not mekalel the avodah. Ve'chad Kohen Gadol, ve'chad Kohen Edot, whether you're a Kohen Gadol or whether you're a Kohen Edot, shelo kidesh yadav raglav shacharit, in your approach to the avodah, when you started the avodah, if you didn't wash your hands and your feet, bavad, and then you do avodah, avodoto psula. Whatever avodah you do is mechulau, it's no good. So what the Braita is teaching you is that the requirement for rechutz yadayim raglayim is when you enter in the mikdash to begin the avodah. So if that was absent, then anything the Kohen does afterwards is problematic, whether it's a Kohen Edot or Kohen Gadol. But if you do the rechutz yadayim raglayim in the morning, that will carry you through the avodot that you do during the day. And you see here that the Kohen Gadol, even if he skips doing the requirements of tefillah and rechutz yadayim raglayim during the middle of the day of Yom Kippur, that's not going to cause a problem because he already did the initial rechutz yadayim raglayim when he entered into the Mikdash. And that'll cover him all day, so the abode itself will not be mechulah. Amalei Rav Asi, Rav Yochanan, michtei. Wait a minute. How can you say that? Chamesh tvilot, vatsara kiddushim, deoraita. The fact that he has to go to the mikveh 5 times and wash his hands and legs 10 times over the day of Yom Kippur, that's something we learn out of the Torah. That's a Torah requirement. And with regards to the Torah requirements of the avodah on Yom Kippurim, in the beginning of Parshat Achrei Mot, as a summary in the Psukim, it says, V'ayta lachem l'chukat olam, b'chodesh ha-shvi'i, b'esor l'chodesh, te'anu et nafshoteichem, kom lacha lo tasu, ha'ezrach v'ager b'tochechem. You see the word chukah appears here by the avodat Yom HaKippurim, and we know that the word chukakti bo, lachvu, and it's me'akev. So you see here that the word chukah is used with regards to the avodah of Yom HaKippurim, which means that anything within the procedure is me'akev. So if the Kohen Gadol skips going to the mikveh, he skips doing the rechutz yadayim raglayim, that's a break in the procedure. That's a failure to do what is prescribed by the Torah. Why doesn't the avodah fail for that reason? Forget about that he didn't wash his hands and feet, or he washed them in the morning, didn't wash them in the morning. The problem is that he didn't follow the procedure that is required. Seder avodat Yom HaKippurim. Seder means that there's a required procedure in order to it, and chukah tells you that it's me'akev. So Amarlei, Rabbi Yochanan answered Rabbi Yami, Amakra, Ulevesham. The pasuk says with regards to the changing of the clothing by the Kohen Gadol, it says there that he toned bat kodesh yobash, umichnese bat yu al bisaro, uvnei bat yachkor, umitzved bat yitznof, bigdei kodeshem, verchatz bamayim et bisaro, Ulevesham. So what Rabbi Yochanan points out is that Ulevesham at the end is extraneous. The pasuk began, toned bat kodesh yobash. The verb to wear, to put them on, is already found in the pasuk. So why is there ulevei sham at the end of the pasuk? That is extraneous. That extraneous word in the pasuk teaches you, levisha me'akevet, vein davar acher me'akev. That levisha is something that is me'akev, but anything else that's found in the pasuk is not me'akev. That pasuk has in it, v'rachatz pamayim e'pisaro. The requirement to go to the mikveh between the changing of the clothing is found in that pasuk. That pasuk has a miyut in it. That pasuk in the miyut tells you the chukah that applies to this whole parasha, which says everything is me'akev in the procedures, there's a miyut, ulevesham. In this pasuk, only levisha is covered by that chukah. Nothing else is covered by it. That means that going to the mikveh is not covered by the chukah. And that's why it would not cause a failure in the avodah of Yom HaKippurim. Tzavu panav. Rav Asi's face lit up as if he had just got a great treasure, great board. Rav Yochanan explains to somebody, he says, wow, that's amazing, that's a great board. Amarlei, Rav Yochanan says back to Rav Asi, Vav ha'ufta katvi locha. Wait a minute, why are you so happy? I gave you an answer that's basically full of air. Rashi says over here, 2 explanations what it means, Vav ha'ufta. Which means that if you write the letter Vav on a piece of wood or on a log, it will not be visible. And that's because the grain of the wood or the grain of the law goes in the direction. And when you make a vav on it, you're not going to be able to see it because it's no different than the actual natural lines or natural splits of the log. That's what it means. Vav ha'ufta katri log. I wrote a vav on a log like that where it's not going to be visible. It's something that's not meaningful. Or Rashi brings a second explanation, which is that the natural lines or grain of the wood look like vavs. They're not really vavs, but they look like vavs. And again, it just means that I gave you an answer that really doesn't hold water. Because Iochi, if I'm right about that, Tzafranami, that means that in the morning also, when he enters into the Mikdash, it should also then be not Me'akev when it comes to going to the mikveh, or comes to doing Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim. The Braita said that the first one is Me'akev. Everything else is not Me'akev. But according to my explanation, nothing should be Me'akev. Because I over here said that going to the mikveh is excluded from the Chukav Yom HaKippurim. So Amar Chizkiyah says, that's not a problem. Amar Kra, Baitalehem, Chak Olam. That's the source for Rikutz Yadayim Raglayim. We say it says Chukah over there. There's a separate Chok Olam that is written, not by the Avodat Yom HaKippurim, but by Rikutz Yadayim Raglayim. So it says, Baitalehem, Chak Olam, Lo, Ulezaro, Ledorotam. Davar HaMe'akev Bezaro, Me'akev Bo. Something that is Me'akev with his offspring, meaning Kohanim and not Kohanim Gedolim, which is Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim is Me'akev by them, that will also be Me'akev by the Kohen Gadol. Davar She'enu Me'akev Bezaro, E'Me'akev Bo. Something that's not Me'akev by a Kohen Ajot will not be Me'akev with a Kohen Gadol. So that means that the entrance, Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim, that is Me'akev, because anybody who enters in the Mikdash, that's Me'akev for. The Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur, it's Me'akev, not because of Adat Yom Kippurim. It's Me'akev because of the normal procedures of the Mikdash, and over there it says Chukah. That Chukah is no miyut. The other hand, anything associated particularly with Yom Kippurim, the changing of the clothes, going to the mikveh, and doing the Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim, during that process, that's all associated with Yom Kippur. That's found in the Pasuk, and the Pasuk has a miyut. To say Levisha is Me'akev, changing from gold clothing, the 8 vestments, to the 4 vestments, that is Me'akev. Certain avodot that are done with the 4 vestments are Me'akev. And those that are doing the 8, they're also Me'akev. So the switching back and forth is Me'akev, but the Tevilah and the Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim in between are not Me'akev. Yonatan Amar Me'ocha, you can learn it from here. It says, Ve'achatsu mimenu Moshe v'Aron u'banav, that when it comes to the Kiyor, they will wash their hands from it. Davara Me'akev b'banav, Me'akev bo. Something that is Me'akev by his children, they must do it. Then he also must do it, and it is Me'akev his avodah. Davar She'enu Me'akev b'banav, things are uniquely associated with the Avodat Yom HaKippurim or with the Kohen Gadol. They are not Me'akev with his children because they're not involved with it. Ain't Me'akev both. They're not Me'akev for him because they are excluded from the Chukah by Yom HaKippurim. Yonatan, my time, Elo Amar Midichizkiyah. Why did Rabbi Yonatan bring the Pasuk by the Kiyor and not the Pasuk that Chizkiyah brought? Madacha, oh, the Dorot Hu Dichtiv. That Pasuk was coming to teach you, by Talaem Chakolam, Lo, Ulezaro, Ledorotam. To teach you that this din is not just relevant by our own, and not just relevant to the Goanim at that time, but relevant Lidorot, afterwards. That's why it says Ulezaro. So you can't use it for the limit of Zaro and Lo, because you need the Zaro to teach you that this has application beyond the here and now. Ve'idach, my time alo amar, mehai. Why doesn't Chizkiyah use Rabbi Yonatan's Pasuk? You violate the Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina, because he needs it for the limit of Rabbi Yossi b'Chanina, the Amar Rabbi Yossi b'Chanina. Kol kior, she'en bo kedei l'kadesh arba kohanim. Any kior that doesn't have sufficient water in it, that 4 kohanim can wash their hands and feet in it, ein mekadshim bo. You're not allowed to use it for kiddush yadayim v'regalayim. Shenamar learns it out of the pasuk, which says, v'chazu mimenu Moshe v'aron ubanav. That the will wash from it, Moshe aron ubanav. So now, over here, Rashi claims that is because there are 4 people that are mentioned in the pasuk. There is Moshe Rabbeinu, there is Aaron, and there's Banav. Banav being Elazar and Itamar. So you have 4 individuals that are mentioned in the Pasuk. So therefore you need a minimum of 4 people's worth of water in the Kiyor in order for it to be Kasher. Now there are problems with this. Rashi himself already notes that, which is Moshe and Aaron never served together as Kohanim Gedolim in the Mikdash. During the 7 days of the Miluim, Moshe was the Kohen Gadol, but then Aaron wasn't the Kohen Gadol. On the 8th day, Aaron was the Kohen Gadol. Moshe was not the Kohen Gadol. So they never served simultaneously. Nevertheless, the Pasuk introduces it using Moshe Aaron Ubanav whereby Kiddush Yedarim Raglayim was relevant to them at some point in terms of Avodah. And so taking that, we say that the four of them together tell you that the Kiyora must contain that much water in order for it to be kasher for a Kohen to do Kiddush Yedarim Raglayim from that Kiyor. Now, the other problem with this is, it says Ubanav. At the time that this Sivui is given, Banav, Nadav and Avihu are still alive. So that means that you have Nadav and Avihu, Elazar and Itamar, you have six people mentioned here, not four people that are mentioned here. So probably the solution to that problem is to say that Banav doesn't mean literally his children. It's just the term Banav is in plural. So a minimum of Banav would be two. And that's how you get Moshe Aronu Banav, and that's how you get the four. The other way to solve the problem, and this is something that I've spoken about in the past, with regards to the eighth day, there is both Machloket Rishonim, as well as a Machloket about Girsaot, with regards to whether Moshe Rabbeinu served as the Kohen Gadol on the eighth day. We know, seemingly, Aaron served as the Kohen Gadol on the eighth day, but there's also a possibility, based on the psukim that are found in Parshat Pikudei, that Moshe Rabbeinu also was in service on the eighth day. In that case, you actually would get an answer to all your questions. Which is, first of all, that is a day where Moshe and Aaron served together in the Mikdash. And again, you can say that the Mikorot on this, but it seems to be that there was a day where Moshe, Aaron, Ubanav were all engaged in the Avodah. So that would answer Rashi's question. In addition, Banav, we've been speaking about only Elazar v'Itamar. Because on the eighth day, that's the day that Nadav and Avihu are killed. And the only ones remaining are Lazar and Itamar. And that would also give you the solution to that other question. And that's how you might get to the four. So that might be significant in explaining how you get to the four individuals here and avoid some of the problems or questions that come up with the other explanations. And you can see a lot of what we just explained in Ot Gimel of the Shita Mekubetzet, where he also brings that the possibility of answering that on the Yom HaShmini, Moshe was also Mishamesh in the Mikdash. Now, Tarabanan. Ketzad mitzvat kiddush. How do you wash your hands and feet in the Mikdash? The requirement here for kiddush yadayim raglayim is not a cleanliness issue. It's not a hygienic issue. It's also not a tumah issue. This is just a simple requirement that they must wash their hands and feet before entering into do avoda. So it's not about whether their hands are dirty or not dirty. It's not whether they're tamei or not tamei. It's a prerequisite for the avoda that's done in the Mikdash, independent of any other reason. Miniach yado yemenit agabei raglo yemenit. Put your right hand on your right foot. Biyado asmalit agabei raglo asmalit. Then put your left hand on your left foot. Because it says in Titisa, by the Kiyor, Rachatsu Aron v'nam mimenu et yudehem ve'et raglehem. So yudehem and raglehem together. So they take that literally. What does it mean, yudehem ve'raglehem? That they are going to wash their hands and their feet. They have to wash them simultaneously. Not that they simply have to wash their hands and their feet, but they wash their hands and their feet together. And how do you do that? You put your right hand on your right foot, and you put your left hand on your left foot, and then you'll end up with Rakatsu Yadehem Viraglehem. The Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yudah Omer, Meniach Shtei Yadav, Zohal Gav Zoh, put one hand on top of the other, V'al Gabe Shtei Raglav, Zohal Gabe Zoh. And then you put those two hands that are on top of each other, on top of both feet, which are on top of each other as well, umikadesh. And then you do the kiddush yadayim. Amrulo hiflanta. They said to Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, you've gone too far. Yidav shalah sotkein. It's not possible to do that. It's an acrobatic act to do something like that. Shapir kamarle. They have a serious question on Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda's position. Rabbi Yosef v'chaveiro misayo. His friend props him up. Or keeps him standing in order to do this. So my benayu. So then what's the machlokin between them? Amrabayu, amida minatzad ika benayu. Question is, when a person is standing with the help of another object or a help of another person, is that called standing? So the easier solution would have been to just sit down and do it sitting down. If you're sitting down and you do it, it's very easy to put your hands on top of each other and on all your feet and wash them all together. So the Chachamim clearly don't allow that. And that's Gemara's next question. Amar Rav Sama, Brei Rav Ashi, Ravina, Leitev, Meitev. Let him sit down, Ula Kadesh, and do the Kiddush. Amar Kro, Lisharet. Because it says, Bevana lo moedi chatsu maim liyamutu, obi yishtan elam izbeach, Lisharet, to be in service, like Tiri Sheila Hashem. So there's Sherut. And we already established the Sherut, Mi'umadu. Because we learned, La Mod Ula Sharet. that one must be standing when they're in service of God. So since Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim is considered to be Sheirut, then there's a requirement of Amidah. So now since you have to be standing, the only way to do this is while you're standing. So for the Tanakama, if you're standing, you have to be standing of your own strength, and you can't be relying on anything else to stand. The only way to do this and accomplish Et Yadayim V'Et Raglayim is to put the right hand on the right foot, the left hand on the left foot, and then Mekadesh them, because then you can still stand up, you don't have to do any acrobatics, and you can wash them together. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi, this takes very literally. Et Yadayim V'Et Raglayim means you have to wash all of them at once. Then you stack one foot on top of the other, one hand on top of the other, and then place the hands on the feet. But then you're not going to be able to keep yourself upright. So you get a friend, another Kohen, will prop him up and keep him upright. Since you can't sit, you're going to prop him up. The machkamina between them is that considered standing? When you are leaning on someone else, you can't stand up your own strength, is that considered to be leaning? According to the Tanakhama, is that considered to be standing? According to the Tanakhama, it's not standing. It's as if you're sitting now, because you can't hold yourself up. And therefore you would fail in terms of washing your hands in a standing position, and that's why he requires you to do it separately, hand and foot. Because the Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda believes even if you're propped up, that's still considered to be Amidah. The Machlokes between them is what we call Amidah min hatzad. When you're being supported by someone else, is that considered to be standing? But I just felt make an important point over here, and say that this has application even outside of the Mikdash. This has broader halakhic implications, which are, Benira, Kishikorin b'Torah, when you read the Torah and you're called up for the Aliyah, or you're the Baal Koreh, Shalolli Smoch, don't lean on the Bima, to prop yourself up, keep yourself up, Mishum Damar b'Megillah, Tibet Torah b'Yamidah. And when you read the Torah, you must be standing, as opposed to Megillah, where you could be sitting. But nevertheless, here you have to be standing. U'bishalmi namar minan, Dasurli Smoch, Mishum D'Gashem Shnitna b'Ema, Kach Nogim Oto b'Ema. Nushalmi gives another reason, not only because you have to be upright and standing because it's appropriate. Just like the Torah was given with all the fire and brimstone and all the fear that was associated with it, so too when we replicate that in Shul and we are simulating the Netinah Mahar Sinai with the Baal Koreh reading from the Torah, that also has to be done by Amidah u'be'emah. You can't be be'emah and Amidah if you're leaning on the Bima, if you're using the Bima to support yourself. From here you see that there is a requirement even outside of the areas of the Mikdash, that when you have a requirement to stand, you must stand of your own strength. If someone else is propping you up, or you're leaning on the wall to prop yourself up, that is not called standing. That's already called sitting down. Although if you look in the Ot Talit of the Shita Mikubetzet, Bim Kein Tzarek Lizeher, B'chol Makom Shel Tzarech Amidah, Kom B'Tfilah, V'Koreh B'Torah, Shelo Yismoch, Ki'ita V'Yishalmi, Rabbeinu Yechiel MiParis, Dari MiParis, Hayomer, Tadavka Shelo Yechol La'amod B'Lis Micha. Lo shma midat. It's only true if you couldn't stand up without that leaning. Then it's not called standing. Aval, heicha sheyachol amod b'lias micha. If you can stand up without leaning, then afkio ses micha shma midat. Even if you're leaning, then it's called standing up. So for instance, if you're davening with a shtender in front of you. If you're leaning on the shtender to the point where if they pull the shtender, you'd fall, that would be problematic. That's not called amidat. Then if you have your hands on the shtender, and you're leaning a little bit, but if they pull the shtender away, it wouldn't change your balance. You would still be standing up. That's not called leaning to the point where it's not Amidah. And that would be considered to be Amidah. Umori Omer, what's the test? Umsomei kol kach v'chozek. Shimtina tela davar. That if you pull the thing away, shumsomei chalav yipol. And where you would fall if you pulled away the thing that's holding you up. Lo shma Amidah. That's not called standing up. Imlav shma Amidah. If not, it's called standing up. So again, it depends how much support the item is providing. So it's providing balance or a little support, it's fine. If it's really what's holding you up, then it's more problematic and it's not called Amidah. All right, now the Gemara continues. Tanurbanan, Kidesh Yadayim Raglayim Bayom, Ein Tzarich L'Kadesh Balayla. Does Kidesh Yadayim Raglayim during the day, he doesn't have to then do it again at night. The night follows the day. So if you wash during the day, then it already covers you for the whole day into the night. Balayla, on the other hand, if you do Yadayim at night, he started doing Avodah at night. Tzarich l'kadesh b'yom. When you get to the new day, you have to do Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim again. Divrei Rabbi. That's Rabbi's position. She'er Rabbi Omer. Lina mo'elet b'kiddush Yadayim Raglayim. Staying overnight. Crossing over Alot HaShachar has the same impact on your hands as it does on other avudot in the Mikdash. That means that the day in the Mikdash begins in the morning from Alot HaShachar and goes from the day through the night, as opposed to the day following the night, like we have by dinim of Shabbat, Yom Tov, and other things. But the Mikdash, the day is the daytime and the night that follows that day. Like Korbanot that you eat for Yom Belayla, the day that you bring it, and the night afterwards, meaning that the night follows the day. So similarly with the Avodah. If you wash your hands during the day, it covers you for the day and even into the night, because the night is a subset or subordinate to the day. On the other hand, if you wash at night, then when you hit Alod HaShachar, that starts a new day in the Mikdash. That new day in the Mikdash causes what's called Lina. That means that any Korban or any item in the Mikdash that was not taken care of by that time becomes Pasul B'Lina. So in instance, if you have items that were not placed on the Mizbeach by that moment at Alod HaShachar, it's a problem of Lina and they can no longer go on the Mizbeach. What Rabbi says is that applies to hands as well. When you cross over that threshold in the morning, your hands now get a reset, and you got to wash again to start over the avodah for the next day. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon by Yochai's son, Rabbi Lazar, argues Omer, Ein Lidam Olad B'Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim. Doesn't have an impact. That means if you wash tonight, you can keep going during the day. Tani Yidach, have another bright that brings this similar machloket. Yom Meidu Makriv Agav Mizbeach, Kol Alay Lo, he's working all night on the Mizbeach. Lo Ra, Ton Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim. Once the sun rises in the morning, or the Lot HaShachar breaks in the morning, you have to wash your hands again, Divrei Rabbi, similar to what we saw before. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kevin Shikidesh Tiyadav Raglav Mitzchilat Avodah, since he already washed his hands when he began to do Avodah, Afilu Mikan Bad Asara Yamim, even from now until 10 days, Eino Tzarech L'Kadesh, you don't have to wash again, assuming that you had no Hesech Hadat in between. Any Hesech Hadat in between would cause a problem. Mitzricha, and we need both Brito to give you this information. Diashmin and Kamaita, if you only brought the first Brito, Bai Kamar Rabbi, the Pasik Leme Avodu Le Avoda. The reason Rabbi requires you wash again when it comes to the new day is because not only is it a new day, but you also stopped working. You finished up the work at night, and now you're starting the work in the morning. You're switching. You had a gap between Avoda Le Avoda. It wasn't continuous Avoda. There's some gap there. So the combination of the gap and the new day are what caused you to need a Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim. Ava Baha, in the case that we bring in the latter Braita, the low Pasak lay, where he's continuously doing Avoda, Ema Modi lay Rabbi the Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon. Maybe Rabbi would agree to Rabbi Lazar Ben Shimon that you don't need to do a new Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim. So Kamash Malan, is that even just with the change of the day, it's enough for Rabbi to require your new Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim? Viyash Mina Baha, you only had the second Braita, Baha Kamar Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon. That's the case where Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon says you don't need a new Netilat Yadayim, it's because you're continuously doing Avoda. Avobaha, Ema Modi Lay the Rabbi. But in the first Braita, where you're both stopping the Avoda and have a new day, maybe over there he would agree that you do need Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim. Tzricha, that's why we need both Braita to tell you that Rabbi and Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon argue in both of those instances. And the issue is, when it comes to Alot HaShachar, does Alot HaShachar trigger the necessity for Netilat Yadayim, and it is somewhat akin to the question of staying up all night, which is going to come up on Shavuot. When one person is up all night learning and stays up all night, do they need to wash Netilat Yadayim in the morning? The same sort of question, which is Netilat Yadayim triggered by the change in day, and therefore you need to wash, or is Netilat Yadayim triggered by the sleep that one has? And only if one has slept is there a requirement for Netilat Yadayim. And that would be an afkamina as to whether you have to do Netilat Yadayim in the morning or not after you've stayed up all night. And where it says, my time with the Rabbi. What's the reasoning of Rabbi? So the pasuk says that they have to be Bivoana o Moedi Chatsumayim Vlo Yamutu O Bigishtam El Mizbeach Lisharet Lakteri Shela Hashem Tichte Bigishtam. When they approach the Mizbeach, so anytime you have a new approach, you have to do Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim. My time at the Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, Tichtev, Bivoam. It says when you come to the Omoed. Only when you come to the Omoed do you require. After that, it covers you for the whole time. V'irach namik tev, I bin Bivoam. Rabbi in the Pasuk doesn't just say Bigishtam, it also says Bivoam Omoed. What does he do with that? Ikte Bigishtam, if it just said Bigishtam, Lokte Bivoam, it didn't say Bivoam, Havamino ko Gisha Bigisha. Every time you started a new Avoda, you have to do a new Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim. God of Rahman Bivuam to teach you, no, that you get coverage for the whole day. Once you did one, you cover all the avoda for that day, but not enough that it will cover over to the next day, and you'll need a new Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim on the next day. Idach Nami, Akte Bigishtam. Wait a minute. For Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon learns out Bavo Ma'o Ma'eit, doesn't he have the word Bigishtam? So Ikte Bivuam, Palokte Bigishtam. If you only had Bivuam and no Bigishtam, Avamina, Filu Abiyah Rekanit. You would think that even if he comes not to do avodah, that he will require washing the hands and feet. Where it says, abir ekanit, haktiv l'sharet. You wouldn't have thought that. It's clear in the pasuk. It says, b'vama omayet katsu ma'im li'umutu, omi yishtanam izbech l'sharet. The requirement here of rechut yadayim ragalayim is to do service. So of course, if you come not to do service, you don't need to do kiddush yadayim ragalayim. Ela b'gishtam mi'bayleg b'karav acha bar Yaakov. It needs b'gishtam for this limit of Ravach b'Yaakov. Damar Ravach b'Yaakov kol modim b'kiddush sheni shulavush mikadesh. When it comes to the changing of the bigadim on Yom HaKippurim, we said that you have to wash his hands and feet, go to the mikveh, and then wash his hands and his feet. So obviously the middle thing is going to the mikveh, because he can't be in his clothing when he's in the mikveh. So obviously he strips down before he goes into the mikveh, and he gets dressed after he comes out of the mikveh. The question is a machloki between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, before he goes into the mikveh, when does he wash his hands and feet? Does he wash his hands and feet before he strips off his clothing? Or does he wash his hands after he's stripped off his clothing? So there it is, a machloket in Yoma as to whether it's done before or after he's stripped down from his clothing. But what Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, when he comes out of the mikveh, everybody agrees he puts his clothes on first and then washes his hands and feet. Damar kra, o bigishtam. Because the pasuk says bigishtam. Mishen mekusar ela gisha bilvad. Someone who only is lacking in going to do the avodah, they need to wash their hands. The Kohen would wash his hands prior to dressing after he came out of the mikveh, then not only would he be missing going to do the service, he would also be missing the fact that he's not dressed. So that's too far removed, and that Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim would not work. That means that after the mikveh, he must get dressed, and then do Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim according to both opinions in the Gemara and Yoma. Questions about beforehand, but afterwards, everybody gets it afterwards, from the word begishtam, and that's what Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon will use it for. Lakdir Ishe Lamali. The pasuk ends, Lakdir Ishe Lashem. Why do you need that? It already says Lisharet. That anything to do in service, then you are required Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim. Why do you have to tell me, oh, when you put the fire on the Mizbeach, or you do Akhtarah on the Mizbeach, that you are required to wash your hands? What does that teach you that you didn't know already? If it just said Lisharet, I would have thought the only time you have to wash your hands and feet is when you're engaged in a Voda, that is involved in things that are me'akev kapara. Zrika tadam, kabbalat tadam, shchita, things that are me'akev the kapara. L'makver kapara lo. But if it wasn't me'akev the kapara, you would think you didn't need to wash your hands. But as we know, haktarat emurim, putting the eish on the mizbeach, or putting the emurim on the mizbeach, is not me'akev kapara. K'mash m'lan, l'aktir yishel Hashem, even a boda that's not me'akev the kapara, requires kiddush yadayim v'raglayim. Okay, we're going to stop here. Two lines down on the top of Chof Amud Aleph.